Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Out of his cronies on Wall Street. This was a bailout that Obama voted for. Now that Obama's in power, he'll finish the job. He'll impose socialism on the rest of the country. Remember this, people. Bush was never a conservative. Bush was never a conservative. Forget what the empty skirts in the media
criticized Mr.
movement in America. Bush is a statist, and he is turning the reins of power over to another statist. So don't be fooled into thinking that the same oligarchy is not in charge. Liberals, you may think that your savior has come, but he's going to answer to the same puppet masters that Bush did. The mannequin-in-chief may have a different face, but the body politic is the same. This is Michael Savage. I approve of this monologue. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Go to my website, michaelsavage.com, for all the stories that, well, I guess you should really be seeing because they're not in your newspaper. Let's start with the top left. Gay marriage mob attacks and screams at an elderly woman. You don't see that story because to the local newspapers, which are run by the gay mafia, gays can only be kind and friendly. Take a look at the faces of friendly and kind as they attacked a bespectacled woman carrying a cross simply because she does not like homosexual marriage, shouting her down and threatening her, menacing her. Beneath that, there's the phony of phonies, Governor Jerry Brown, Moonbeam they used to call him, Moonbeam he is. Moonbeam just told voters, drop dead. Three suits filed the day after the election opened the door to step-by-step elimination of the people's right to amend the Constitution by initiative, attorney said, drop dead. Three suits filed the day after the election opened the door to step-by-step elimination of the people's right to amend the Constitution by initiative, attorney said. They're 100% right. And who's trying to kill the initiative process? Who is trying to kill the only direct democracy left in America? None other than the phony radical leftist Jerry Moonbeam Brown. And beneath it, we have another Moonbeam, Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger pandering to the gay mafia. Schwarzenegger pandering to the illegal aliens. We have a budget deficit in the state of California that will grow to $28 billion. Instead of saying we can no longer afford health care for illegal aliens, we're closing down access to the emergency rooms immediately unless you're a citizen. We're going to put CHP officers in every hospital in California. You're going to have to show proof of citizenship before you get medical care. That would save the state $15 billion a year alone. But instead, this musclehead, this fraudulent musclehead, this fake Republican, this... I have so many words I'd like to use about this Schwarzenegger. I never liked him. I never liked his movies. I never liked his steroid body. And I like his policies even less. He panders to the illegals. He panders to the gays. He tells drop dead to the voters. You hear this? There's another few stories on MichaelSavage.com. 1-800-449-8255. I'm reluctant to read some of the stories to you because I'm not sure that you can handle it. I'm not quite sure that you can handle what I have on my website today. There's no good news. It's all bad news. there's not a good news. I don't even have a health article on there. You know why? Because even the health articles are contaminated with fraud. I'll give you an example. An article came out a few days ago saying that statins, whatever you want to call them, since I remember the word, the borough, Staten Island, I don't like to call them statins. The drug that many of you are taking, the dangerous drug, the statins, that your quack doctor convinced you will save your life, which is probably destroying your memory and your muscle, or giving you muscle fatigue, very dangerous drugs. A very dangerous class of drugs that will eventually be uncovered for what I'm telling you they are. They're now trying to say to you that if you look at a new study, everybody should be on statins. Everybody should be on these drugs, they're saying. It can reduce the risk of heart attack because they've suddenly discovered that coronary artery disease and heart attacks are related to inflammation. Well, I've known this for 15 years. I've had my CRP levels checked for at least 5 to 10 years. And guess what? There's a cheaper alternative to this drug that they're trying to push on you. It's called aspirin. Aspirin costs pennies a day instead of dollars a day. Aspirin doesn't cause memory loss and muscle fatigue. But aspirin cannot be patented, so the criminals in the drug industry are now trying to get prescription drugs into every element of American society. Now, where's the corruption in this? The corruption is very simple. If you read the study through and through, as I have, you're going to find out that the study, the so-called scientific study, was funded by the drug company that makes the drug. Now, this never would have been permitted in America 10 years ago. But because the academic doctor today is nothing, again, I can't use the language I'd like to use. I'm not in a barroom. I'm on the radio show. Because the academic doctors, the so-called scientists, are all bought and sold like prostitutes on the cheapest street in your town, you don't even know who's funding the studies. But then you need me to tell you. And I'm telling you this study is a fraud, through and through. Funded by the drug companies, doctors are stooges telling you you need statins. You need statins like you need a banana in your ear. Now I'm going to take your calls when I come back. It's going to be open mic to Mike Day on the Savage Nation. So I say everything's corrupt. I have never seen a country, this country, as demoralized and as corrupt as it is today. There's not one institution in this country that has not been tainted by corruption. Not one. Tell me what element of American society has not been tainted by corruption. Can you name it? Because I don't know what it is. We are like Sicily before the Normans invaded. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yeah, well, we're all waiting for change. We don't know what the change is going to be, I guess. I think it'll be shaken out of our pockets. That's what it'll be, change for the illegal aliens and change for the liberal social agenda. I want to talk about sauce for a minute, spaghetti sauce. There's an Italian sauce called puttanesca sauce, and basically it means prostitute sauce. And it was developed, as I understand the story, thousands of years ago outside the Roman Colosseum, where the ladies of the night plied their trade. And various very hot spices were put into the sauce to kill various bacteria that the women, you know, allegedly or would pick up during their work. And then, you know, eventually just became a sauce. People don't even know the puttanesca sauce, what it refers to. But our politics today in America is very much like puttanesca sauce in so many ways that I don't even have to finish the thought. Instead, I'll go to the callers. John in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. What's on your mind, my friend?
I love that story from your new book about your father's friend who had a business and then he lost it. It's funny, when I'm reading that story, I could actually picture the way his eyes were going back and forth, asking you what happened. It just goes to show that that could happen to anybody in any type of business that they have in this country or this
world. It's an interesting, sad story because I love that man, you know, like a second father, and it was heartbreaking for me to see him go from nothing to a lot, and then to have nothing again, sitting there reduced to nothingness, you know. But, you know, what I'm saying is when I wrote that story for the book, things had not yet really gotten bad in America yet financially. And actually when I first told it. But, you know, I think that that's going to be more typical of American businesses than atypical in the coming years, don't you? That's what we all fear.
I agree. I mean, I know lots of friends of mine that have businesses that are doing very well, and they're walking around like they're on top of the world. So I tell them, and I say, you got to look and just stop and just look, put everything in perspective, and just thank God that you have a business that's doing well right now, because one of these days, it might not be doing well anymore. Then what are you going to do? I want to tell everybody about that story. I want to make copies and just give it to everybody that I know. It really is a...
It's only 2 pages long. It's called A Leather Man Gets Brain Cancer. And I think I'll read a paragraph from it. This is about a man who grew up as one of my father's best friends in a very poor neighborhood in New York City. They were immigrants together. Their parents came over maybe on the same boat, or they met each other in the slums of New York. They both had a very tough life, and they worked their way up little by little, as the immigrants have to do as they struggle in any society. This man went into a business that took off at a certain point like a rocket. He hit a fad in a certain business and started to make a great deal of money. He moved way beyond our family. While we lived in an attached brick house in Queens, he had the money to move his family to a detached house. I remember how important that distinction was in those days. Attached, detached. Buick LeSabre, Buick Roadmaster. Or if you're a Rockefeller, you bought a Cadillac. People used to grade their status in those days by their car model and house. Well, I don't suppose it's much different today. It just isn't as easy to figure out in some regard, not on the road anyway. So anyway, this guy moves to this detached house in Roslyn, New York. It was a beautiful house. It had its own lawn all around it. We only had a little strip of grass in the back and a tiny one in the front. The carpet, if you could believe it, was wall to wall, and it was pink. He was a big cigar smoker. We would go and visit. I had a very good time. He would gloat with the cigar and lord it over my father. We'd leave. My father never said anything against him. But, you know, I could see in his eyes that he was a little, let's say, that he lost that little battle at that time. You know how human beings are. They're competitive. Even if they love their friend, if their friend does better than them, there's a degree of envy in every human being. It's just one of the cardinal sins. As years went on, the man's business continued to thrive. Then I left home and moved away from NYC. I went and did my thing collecting plants, working for my graduate degrees thousands of miles away. I was living 6,000 miles away, then 9,000 miles away in the Fiji Islands. Lo and behold, on one of my trips back to New York when I was already a father myself, I heard that this man's leather business had collapsed entirely. The fare that he rode like a wave died. People were no longer buying that particular product. And the man who had a chain of successful wholesale stores lost everything. He lost everything. And it was so fast that he wound up living where he started, on the Lower East Side of New York, back in a poor relative's apartment with his wife and the relative's family, back where he started in a one-room apartment, and that's where I come in. I came back from one of my trips to the Fiji Island. I was a young man. I don't know how old, 35, 40. My father was dead, and here sits the leather man. Now, remember, I loved him like another father. I loved all my father's friends. You know how it is when you're a kid in a very close-knit community. You tend to love the people like they're your own. We all grew up so close together, and there was never a bad word between him and my father, never. He sits there, shrunken up in the chair in my parents' living room after he'd lost everything. He looked up at me, still smoking a cigar, and practically pleaded, "Michael, Michael, look what happened to me. Look what happened to me." His eyes were wandering left and right. He didn't understand what happened to him. He said, "I'd rather have cancer than what God did to me." Lo and behold, I soon left New York again. I went back to do what I did, which was collect plants. And I heard that a few years later, he died from one of the most rapidly invasive forms of brain cancer. Be careful what you say. God hears the truth but waits. That is from Psychological Nudity. There's a lot of interesting stories that are all based on reality. And I want to lead back to an interesting story right now. I'm here in Hollywood for a week or so. And last night, the people will remain anonymous. I went to dinner with a very famous Hollywood figure from many years ago, who had wanted to meet me because he loves my storytelling. Now, this guy was very famous. He knew everyone going back to Orson Welles, Lenny Bruce. You name the personality, he was their friend. This guy was at the top of the heap. He's one of the icons. I had no idea he was a fan. He came in the house and he said, "What a great honor it is to meet you, Michael." I said, I'm really knocked out. What do you mean a great honor? He said, "You are the best storyteller in America right now, and I knew the best, and I know the best." He said, "Nobody can do what you do." I said, "That's very nice to hear." I said, "Do you know that I make up what I do on the show as I'm talking?" He said, "That's what I'm talking about, Michael." He said, "I know guys who are famous right now. They go on Leno. They go on Letterman." He said, "Every word they say is scripted. Every joke that is said on television is scripted. Whether it's Leno or Letterman," he said, "they can't make up a joke. They can't make up a story. It's all scripted down to the last word. They sound funny, but if you take away the teleprompter, they become numb." I said, "You got to tell me that." I said, "I played Dustin Hoffman yesterday. Sound like a disconnected lunatic in Creedmoor Mental Asylum. Stringing together words he heard at the various parties. Transformational. Words that make no sense." He said, "That's what I'm talking about, Michael." He says, "You're the greatest storyteller in America today." I said, "Well, coming from you, a man who's been where you have been, is a real compliment. I want to thank you for that." And as he left, after we sat with a couple of drinks, he took away a copy of Psychological Nudity, and I took a copy of his book.
Savage.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, everything is corrupt. The voters are told not to go to the ammo box, but the ballot box. They spend years voting to support marriage. 7 out of 10 blacks support marriage, even though they vote for Obama. And the gay mafia shops it to Moonbeam, the attorney general, and the musclehead Schwarzenegger, who say we're going to overturn the voters. The voters can drop dead. Now, you then turn, you say, well, what element of American society is not corrupted by these bums, these sold-out bums who are owned lock, stock, and barrel by a special interest group? So, oh, science. Science today is not what Albert Einstein was a scientist. You know, there's no Schweitzers anymore that I know of. They're all bought and sold. That's why I was telling you, I don't even want to put that article up about the statins. Supposedly, you need them now. You're going to reduce your risk of heart attack by 47%. But if you actually read the study, because I have a PhD in epidemiology, which is what I did for a living, you find out that the drug company that makes the drug funded the study. So how do you think it's going to turn out? That the drug is no good for you, idiot? But the doctors are nothing but panderers today. Kansas, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike. The study itself scientifically is actually right on. I mean, it's so incredibly regulated here that I think, you know, even though it was the company that was funding it, you know, I still have to stand behind the science of the study.
No, you have to stand behind the science because you worked for the company.
Not specifically. There are...
Yeah, and if did you check in detail that article? Did you notice that it was an increase in diabetes amongst the subjects?
Yes, I did, and I definitely agree that, you know, statins, as far as the drug is concerned, may have... I don't know. I mean, I don't really...
No, let's stick to the facts so that the people are not... Let's just give full disclosure to the listeners of the Savage Nation who are now going to be told they need statins. Everyone needs a statin now. Like every child needs Ritalin. Every child needs Prozac. Every child needs a drug. Instead of dealing with the diet that's making the child crazy, the fact that they're living on the edge of the nutritional field and they're winding up deficient nutrients and they wind up needing drugs... Why don't we talk about why people need statins? Why do they have elevated cholesterol to begin with? And is elevated cholesterol necessarily a bad thing?
No, I've always said from the beginning, cholesterol, I mean, has nothing to do with it. Your body makes cholesterol naturally.
That's right. This is another myth. Elevated cholesterol per se is not necessarily a bad thing. It is whether the body converts the elevated cholesterol into a plaque. Let us put it to you that way. Now, what prevents plaque from forming and what causes plaque to form? That is debatable, but I believe by the studies I've read that vitamin C, vitamin E, and various other components will prevent the conversion of cholesterol into plaque, which clogs the arteries. But to argue that you need statins and it's going to prevent heart attacks is ludicrous when you see that the drug company funded it, number one, and doesn't report in any detail the side effects. And there are many side effects in addition to diabetes from statins. For example, how about the muscle fatigue that that numerous people report? Why is that not an issue?
You know, I think it is. And this is my opinion on it. As far as the drug itself, you can have whatever opinion, but as far as the use of CRP as a test for inflammation, I think that it's right on, scientifically.
All right, C-reactive protein. I've been getting that test for 10 years because I have elevated cholesterol and I have a heart disease in my family. But my C-reactive protein levels are all in the normal range. Do you know why? I don't use statins. What do I use?
You probably use antioxidants from knowing what
I use. A powerful dose of antioxidants for 30 years, number one. Number two, I use enormous amounts of garlic. Number three, I take an aspirin, a small aspirin, every other night. Number four, I moderately exercise. There are ways to control inflammatory processes in the body without using dangerous drugs that may have side effects that are worse than worse than the cholesterol levels.
See, you know, there can be another study on how effective is an aspirin regimen when we apply it to this test. I mean, I don't know.
I hear you, but all I'm saying is medicine today is not what it was 20 years ago. The studies are funded by drug companies. I would doubt very much that if this study showed in the opposite, it would ever have been published. Don't you agree with me?
I don't think so, because, you know, I think that The biggest part of studies these days is that they have to be completely auditable, meaning everything has to be.
Oh, they have to be auditable. You mean like the Treasury Department is audited by other government workers? You mean like the Treasury Department's $2 trillion in bailout money is audited by people who are bought off by the Treasury Department? You know, you ask yourself, why aren't congressmen and senators who sit on the boards, which have oversight over Paulson, why are they not doing anything? If you find out how much money they just gave congressmen for their reelection campaigns, you'll find out why both sides of the aisle are dummied up and say nothing about it. There is no oversight in America. Here we sat through the last 6 months. We expected a dirty bum, and look what we got, a dirty bum. Tampa, Florida. George, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to personally thank you for converting me from a liberal to a conservative. Actually, what aided the process as well was getting my first check at my my accounting job and seeing just how much money was taken out and thinking about where it was going, aided by you, of course.
Hold on. You've seen nothing yet. You have seen nothing yet. Wait until Obama pays for his social engineering. Wait until you see that you're actually a rich man, even though you don't know it.
Well, another thing, too, is that I just wanted to comment on how just hilarious it is that, you know, we're told to go out, vote, you know, be part of this historical election and be part of the political process. And now that it's all over, don't worry about it now. We've got it. We've got the keys. You can go back to... to your porn, your...
Right. You can go back. And number two, if you vote in a state ballot initiative, such as we did in California, Arizona, and Florida, to ban homosexual marriage because most people find it bannable and they don't like the idea that it's destroying traditional family values, we'll overturn anything we don't like. That means we're not living in a democracy. It means we're living in a dictatorship run by a few small-minded Lilliputians like Governor Jerry Brown Moonbeam, or the Schwarzenegger guy who says to the people, now that you voted, go home and drop dead. We're going to overturn it. What kind of country is this that permits governors like that to get away with it without impeaching him? Tell you what, my friend, since you're such a good sport, if you can name one story in psychological nudity, I'm going to give them away all day today, other than Dead Man's Pants, I'll give you a free book. Which story, quickly, do you want to read?
Louie and the Monkey.
Oh, we got a winner right here. Stay on the line. The rest of you are listening to the show. Go on to michaelsavage.com. It says click here to see the contents. That's all you got to do, and you'll see the 75 stories. You can't mention any of the stories that we've already mentioned, though. It's got to be something new. It cannot be Dead Man's Pants. It cannot be Louie the Monkey. It has to be something different, okay? 1-800-449-8255, phone number. Brian in San Antonio, Texas. On the drug companies and medication. Go ahead, please.
Mike, to your point about drug companies and the studies that they're putting out, they are outcomes-based, meaning that they are specifically looking to have an outcome when they actually launch these studies. And a perfect example of that is the COURAGE data that came out that talked about routine medication versus angioplasty when you're going in for a heart cath. The study itself started out with 30,000 patients, and when the study was published, it only had 3,000 of those original 30,000.
Oh, really? You mean they took out one sample of the 30,000, which would prove the point they wanted to prove? That's amazing to me.
Yes.
They're able to get away with publishing that in the so-called scientific journals today, which are no better than tabloids?
You're absolutely right, and not only that, they've come out with a second leg of it to try to defend their point in that, but any interventional cardiologist out there that has read the study realizes that it is nothing more than a farce in so many ways.
Well, wait a minute. This is interesting. You raised something. They did a sample of 30,000 people. What were they looking for?
Well, they were looking to see that medication was going to give you better outcomes for people who have coronary artery disease.
Okay, and, now wait, what kind of medication?
There was a number of them, and I don't want to be quoted exactly.
All right, so they were trying to show that medication in general is helpful or beneficial in some way, as opposed to no medication at all.
Correct.
All right. And so, and when we say no medication at all, we mean probably just diet and exercise, lifestyle adjustments, separate from medication. So they do a study with 30,000 people. They don't like the results because it doesn't prove what they want to prove. So they cut out 27,000 people, and they talk only about what happened amongst 3,000, which proved their point. That's what you're saying, correct?
Right, and that someone does not need to come into the lab for angioplasty or to be taken a look at with having a normal heart cath done. Because they were saying, the point being is that they were... That too many people were having stents or balloon angioplasty done on them.
Well, all I can say is that when you have an academic medical establishment owned to a great extent by the drug companies, which are trying to sell a product, and I want to back up here for a minute. I have great faith in pharmaceuticals that do miracles, but I don't like biased studies that are false to sell a drug. You know what I'm saying? If it weren't for prescription drugs, I wouldn't be here today. I know that from childhood illnesses that I had. But that is not to say that all prescription drugs are valid in every case that they're being sold for. And moreover, I believe that the corruption in the medical scientific establishment today is so complete that it mirrors our political system. That's what I was getting at.
I couldn't agree with you more. The other thing that I'd like to point out is that it's the same with birth control and any other type of pharmaceutical drug that is out there and available. There are so many other side effects that are not discussed.
Yes, so many other side effects, even to abortion, that's not discussed. For example, are you aware of the fact that people have done retrospective analyses of people who've had abortions and breast cancer and found the correlation between the two?
That's the point that I'd like to bring up. There's studies on everything, but the one thing that they will not study is the effects on a woman post-abortion. And when you look at the 54 million abortions that have happened since Roe v. Wade just here in the U.S., why is it that there is no study to actually look at what has happened to the woman herself? And that's where you'd like to see the feminazis out there or the feminists themselves really trying to protect those women who, if they really were to stand up for what they say they believe.
Well, I've seen studies which indicate that high rates of abortion are associated with, unfortunately associated with, breast cancer. And these studies are rarely, if ever, discussed whenever you see stories about breast cancer. For example, in Marin County, California, a very liberal community where there's a high, many of the women were high users of marijuana, they were very promiscuous, and they were very big users of abortion and birth control pills. Unfortunately, there's also a very high incidence of breast cancer. Rarely have you seen any discussion. Let's talk about discussion. They're not even able to discuss the potential or putative link between the elements I just mentioned and breast cancer. So there's no science involved in most of these studies.
Well, let's
Brian, name one story in Psychological Nudity you can't wait to read, and I'll send you a free copy of the book.
Mike, I'll name a story, but I just received the book, and I also just received Political Zoo, and I love the satire in that, especially with the reference to Jesse Jackson, Bono, and so many more. But I would like to just make one more point or just one more comment. My father had the honor of meeting you at Laguna Seca years back. I'm actually from the Monterey Peninsula, and I just wanted to point that out. I'm living in San Antonio now. But
Where did we meet? At which racetrack?
This was at Laguna Seca in Salinas.
I was broadcasting a Formula One race, I remember, one day for a local station. That was well over 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think this was back in 94 or so.
It was just before I became a national host. Yeah, that was quite exciting. I love automobile races, and I'm a car lover. I thank you so much, Brian. You're a great caller. I really appreciate it. The time is 47, almost 48 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is only a matter of time until we find out what we got here. Oh, is there going to be buyer's remorse? Welcome back to the Savage Nation. But all we could do is sit and wait for the other shoe to fall, so to speak. New York City, Bill, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Bill?
Michael, good evening. I grew up outside of New York, and as a kid, listened to a guy on the radio by the name of Gene Shepherd.
Everybody talks about him. They loved him.
My goodness, there's only one person in the world. And I listen to sports. I listen to news. If I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I listen to the radio. I really don't believe there's anybody who can tell a story like you. And the other thing is, when I first...
Well, maybe I should stop doing politics and just tell stories. Because I've got people who are liberals who don't like my politics, but they tune in to hear my storytelling. They all say the same thing. You know, I hate your politics, but I love your stories about your childhood in New York with your father and growing up and your mother. And I said, okay, well, I'll just tell you what. I'll cut the politics out. I'll just tell you stories. Is that what the American people want me to do?
When I started listening to you, I said, who the heck is this guy? This guy is a lunatic. And the more I listened for a longer period of time and saw the things that you were saying come true, I said, this man really...
Then you realize you're crazy also.
No. I'm going crazy. I want to scream with the current state of politics and the current state of this country.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, when you are blunt and direct in a world of double talk and no one telling you the truth and politicians lying through their teeth, saying one thing, doing another, getting elected and stabbing you in the back, when you got a corrupt government, when you got a corrupt legislature, when you got every element of society, and you got a guy up there like a throwback speaking to you directly and honestly, as honestly as he can, what do you think? You're going to think he's crazy because you never heard anything like this in a society.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So
Realize that when Charles Schumer had the audacity 2 weeks ago to say that we don't have pornography on television and we shouldn't have hate, we shouldn't have political talk we don't agree with, I equate conservative political talk with pornography, do you realize how far we have fallen as a nation? Here is a guy from Brooklyn, New York, who went to Harvard, who ought to know what fascism is. It should be encoded in his DNA. Instead, he has become the very fascist that he claims he opposed. Charles Schumer, I'm talking about.
Well, you look at New York reelecting him. That says a lot about New York and Hillary Clinton. But how about Martha? I mean, what is
yes.
wrong with this country?
Yes. Well, let me ask you a question, since you want a free copy of the book. Name one story, and I'll send you one.
Adel's Tuna.
Fat Al's Tuna, you win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. And folks, again, go to michaelsavage.com, get your copies now before the holidays, and that'll be it. I think you're going to enjoy it. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I'll do politics if you want. I'll do stories if you want. I will do science if you want. I will do history if you want. I will do cooking and menus if you want. I'll give you a meatball recipe if you want. Look, I'm one of the few people in radio who's going to actually survive because too many people have committed themselves too deeply to talking solely about politics and politicians. There's nothing more to be said, particularly between now and, let us say, the end of January, unless something catastrophic occurs. What can I say to you that you haven't read or heard about 50,000 times? You're afraid Obama's going to do this. You're afraid Obama's going to do that. You're afraid this, you're afraid that. Let's forget it already. Everyone's afraid. It's over. So now we have a talk show and an audience, a large audience, the third largest audience in talk radio. I am capable of flexibility, unlike others who have no background other than disc jockeying. What can they talk about? They're going to continue the same rubbish talking about window dressing. Obama did this, he talked too loud there, he did this, and Bush said that. Who cares anymore? I don't care, so how can you care? And so, therefore, I'm going to start to tell you, I'm going to start to talk about the things that made me famous. The things that made me famous were not so much politics as much as my wide grasp of other things in the world. Science, poetry, art, you name it. Movies. Let's go down, let's walk in a museum together. See if you can find anybody else in talk radio who can match me in terms of walking through a museum and looking at paintings, particularly of certain kinds of paintings. See if you can find anybody in talk radio who can match me in science or medicine. It's impossible. They're all glorified disc jockeys. And I don't know about you, but another man in a Hawaiian shirt with a needle doesn't impress me.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Commemorate Veterans Day by honoring all those who have worn the uniform of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, and Marine Corps. Thank you for serving our great nation.
Yes, thank you for serving the Bush administration. You've done a very fine job. 1-800-449-8255. Soon you'll be serving the Obama, heads. So you'll be serving them. Politics, science, art, medicine, cooking, meatballs, psychology, taxes. Wait until you hear the buyer's remorse when Obama puts a surtax on all of the good liberals who elected him, and they start screaming. But I didn't think. Gee, I thought that the tax would only apply to people who didn't vote for Obama. You mean we have to pay it too? How could that be? You mean we have to pay higher taxes too? But we voted for you. Get back to me at that point. New Hampshire, Dennis, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind tonight?
I was reading in your book, which I have several copies. Thank you very much for sending them. In page 75, Killing Mice in a Laboratory.
Killing Mice in a Laboratory, right.
Professor warned me that I would lose my fellowship if I would not comply. This is when you were in graduate school. He knew that the only other income that was $300 a month stipend. I refused anyway. He dismissed me. I was a purist. I always paid for it. Here's the story. My question. You have a 10 million person audience now that is listening to you. Where is the professor?
You're not going to believe this. When he died of brain cancer a few years later,
well,
he was a miserable, horrible human being. I didn't wish brain cancer on him, but he was a sadistic. Many people in the medical professions have a mild sadistic streak in them, by the way. They're not all benevolent, Schweitzer-esque type of people. I found many of them to be mildly sadistic. This one was on a major league of sadism. He manipulated his graduate students. He lorded it over them. And the poor lab animals, I mean, he mistreated them, truthfully. And I'm not saying there's any relationship between him killing lab animals and getting brain cancer, but I would suggest that perhaps, just perhaps, some of the chemicals that he worked with may have contributed to the cancer. But it's a very good story. People don't realize that I refused to kill lab animals and lost my first graduate fellowship because of it.
Fabulous story. It's absolutely fabulous. It makes you an absolute wonderful person, and I enjoy your show, and this book is absolutely the most fantastic thing I've ever read in my life, and I still have copies, two copies that I'm going to give away for Christmas. And
you know, you're a very nice person. I'm going to send you another one, fourth for Christmas. Dennis, stay on the line. It's very nice. I believe there are a lot of truths in here, and that's what it is. I want to read you a paragraph from it. So I had to clean up these lab animals' cages. When I first went to graduate school, I was told to kill lab mice. I refused. The professor warned me that I would lose my fellowship if I would not comply. He knew I had no other income except that $300 a month stipend. I refused anyway. He dismissed me. I was always a purist and always paid for it. Here's that story. The first year in graduate school, I was in pharmacology. My job was to clean cages of mice. I'll never forget it as long as I live. I went into pharmacology. It was the first day. The professor, he was an evil doctor, said to me, "Your job is to pith the mice, kill them. First, I had to clean the crap out of the cage. I remember hearing my deceased ancestor's voices saying to me, "This is what we evolved for, so that you could be cleaning up the droppings of a rodent?" I heard this in my head. It was as though my ancestors were talking to me as I was cleaning the cages. See, I have a very unique relationship with my ancestors. They're all alive in my head when I want them to be, which is what makes me such a deep person, by the way. Many people are afraid of these things. They think they're schizophrenic, or they've got to suppress it with drugs. Trust me, if you'll learn to be a tap into your ancestry and talk to them when you want to and tune them out when you want to kind of person, you could become an amazing human being. So I'm cleaning the cage, and I hear, I don't know if it was my deceased father, actually. It couldn't have been because he was still living. So it had to be another ancestor I never met, this voice. This is what we evolved for? Millions of years of evolution so you could stick your hand into a cage and clean up mouse droppings, said the voice. So I thought back and replied to the voice, why, you're going to pay my rent? I mean, who's going to pay my rent? I was making $300 a month in a fellowship at the time. So that shut up the voice pretty well because I had to make a buck and that's what I had to do. I didn't mind cleaning the crap. I hated it, but I had to do it. A few days later, this evil professor says to me, your job is also to pith, kill the animals. In other words, and he had a midget working for him. I'll never forget it as long as I live. I won't forget this either. A midget woman who was a sadist. She was frightening because she smiled while she killed the animals. She said, Michael, here's how you do it. You hold a mouse gently in your hand and you make sure its head is between your thumb and forefinger so it can't move. You stroke its head so it relaxes. You then insert the thing here until you hear it pop. Its brain explodes and it's dead. So now I had a real conscience thing. I said, look, I'm not killing these animals. I won't do it. So I went to the professor and said, Professor, I can't do this. I'm not going to kill these animals. He said to me, you have no choice. Either you kill the animals or I'm canceling your fellowship and you're out of graduate school. He knew I was far away from home. I had no money. He was a real SOB, a real evil guy. So I said, well, you'll have to do what you have to do. And he fired me right there, threw me out of the laboratory because I wouldn't kill mice. And I wouldn't do it. So what could I do? I didn't put my tail between my legs. I was 6,000 miles from home. So I said to myself, how can I stay in graduate school and not kill poor little innocent animals? So I went over to the botany department, plants. And I talked to the head of the department. And I got a fellowship in botany. That's actually how I got into botany, believe it or not. Would you believe it? You talk about faith? Sometimes you got to follow the river inside your own soul. I've got to tell you that and not worry about it. If you really follow that strong river inside your soul, you're going to wind up on top 99% of the time. It's a great story, and it's 100% true. So it doesn't make me an animal rights wacko, although I'm not afraid to be called that, amongst other things. I eat animals, truthfully, as I've told you. I don't enjoy the slaughter of animals. I don't hunt animals, although I don't condemn those who do. I didn't grow up hunting. We didn't hunt animals in the Bronx. If you grew up doing it, God bless you. It makes you a good soldier and a good American. I didn't. It's just a different culture. I know how to use a gun, but I never envisioned shooting varmints with it. Who did I have in my mind when I was shooting targets? Do you know that there was a rifle team in my high school when I was a youth? I've told that story, so I'm going to pause right here. About the rifle team in the basement of my high school, and nobody shot anybody. And that's because they were not liberals. They were Americans. That's because the kids weren't on drugs. They were on chopped liver. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. I could tell you a new story now. I went to a chiropractor for the first time yesterday. I don't like, let me put it this way. Members of my family have been saved by chiropractors, okay? They swear by them. But I don't like having my spine manipulated any more than I like having my brain manipulated, okay? I'm a resistor. Get your hands off my spine. It's not yours to manipulate. I'm a very lucky guy. I never had back pain in my whole life. Never. That is until I visited a chiropractor. I have a problem with my right foot. The ball of my foot's been hurting me. I'm really achy. You know, I'm a walker, I'm a bicyclist, but not a runner. I gave up running 30 years ago, thank God. It would have killed me if I hadn't stopped. And that's a side story. An article just came out. It says exercise can do a lot of good for most people, but it apparently isn't much help to those with heart failure. The fastest growing heart problem in the United States. The study, the largest ever of exercise in patients whose hearts don't pump enough blood, left many doctors disappointed. Results were reported today at the American Heart Association. In other words, they don't know what to do. They're telling people to exercise after their heart failure, and the study shows that it doesn't do anything. Nothing. In fact, it goes back to what I said. If you had heart failure, a good idea is to sit in bed or sit in a chair, watch TV, or read a book. Get up once in a while, have a meal. What are you people, crazy? Running in circles like that with heart failure? You should have learned by now that. So anyway, I go to the chiropractor, and my right foot is really killing me. So the family members go in, I hear cracking in the other room. And it's like sparks. It sounded like Frankenstein making something in the other. I was really, really reluctant, but I felt embarrassed because this guy is allegedly such a great healer. and he's helped my family. I figured, all right, and every time I go along with somebody else's program, something goes wrong. It's happened twice now. The colon thing? I never wanted it for years. I knew it would be a bad mistake. Okay, that was a bad mistake. Luckily, the quack didn't puncture my guts, but I was sick for a month. I didn't want the colonoscopy. I shouldn't have had the colonoscopy. I don't recommend the colonoscopy. It's another myth. Another myth of the media and the medical establishment. And I'll tell you why. I've told you why. Stop. Oh, I'm 50. I got to have it now. Okay, great. So I go to the chiropractor, as I said to you, and the foot's hurting me, the bottom, the ball of the right foot. The intake stir, this, and it puts me in a rack. I said, look, please just don't do the spine. Let's deal with the foot. So he lays me down on the thing, and he pulls on my foot. I almost died. He yanked my toes towards him. I broke out in a hot sweat from my head to my toe. He said, how did that feel? I said, do you know what a steam bath is? Because my body feels like I just went in a steam bath from the reaction I had from you. He said, I had to stretch it to create an opening to the bone should go up. I went home. I had pains in my back and in my other foot, both feet. I'm like a cripple. I couldn't walk. I couldn't. My back hurt me. My legs hurt me, all from the chiropractor, which goes back to my basic belief system, common sense. Common sense in health makes good sense in all ways. Common sense is sorely lacking in America. I'm a commonsensical kind of guy. I try to see things in that manner. For example, I remember reading when I was 12 or 13 years old. I used to like to read jokes. And one of the jokes I read was about a man who had a medical problem. Every time he bent over to tie his shoes, he would almost pass out. He didn't know what to do. Every time he'd lean over to tie his shoelaces, he'd see stars and he would almost pass out. He went from one doctor to the next doctor. The next doctor sent him to a specialist. They did every test under the sun. Finally, he goes back to his family doctor, and the doctor says, what's your problem? He says, every time I lean over to tie my shoelaces, I get faint and I almost pass out. The guy says, your collar is too tight. Next case. So I laughed at that because I used to like common sense solutions to some problems. You can turn anything into something that it isn't. There's another story related to it. An old man, 90, goes to his doctor. Doctor says, what's the problem? He says, I want you to lower my sex drive. Doctor does a double take. Lower your sex drive? He says, usually guys your age want me to raise their sex drive. He says, no. And he puts his finger on his own forehead and he says, I want you to lower my sex drive from here, pointing to his head, to here, pointing to the region below his waist. Cymbal shot. Now, that's the kind of joke you could tell at a family gathering where it's a salesman's joke. I've had people, for example, when I'm down here, tell me dirty jokes, which are okay. Some of them are funny. Dirty jokes can be funny. Real filthy, horrible, vaudevillian, dirty, filthy, rotten jokes. I don't happen to like them, but I laugh. Some of them are funny. So I tell them that joke, and I say, here's one that you can tell to your grandchildren. And you know what? I get as much of a laugh out of that clean joke as they get out of the dirty joke. So what's the point? You don't have to go to the Chris Rock filth HBO garbage to tell a joke that people will laugh at. The problem is people are stupid today. They have no stories. They don't know what life is. So they don't know what life 101 is, so they can't make up a story about life 101. So instead they go down to the lowest common denominator, the filth. You don't have to do it to get a laugh. That's all I can tell you. You want politics? You want jokes? Pauline, New York, WOR. Go ahead. What do you want, Pauline? You give me the command and I'll give it to you.
I was interested if you were considering maybe changing the format of your show, doing less politics and just doing more of what you're doing, just talking about your childhood.
The problem is, how many stories can I tell about a childhood that's already been told for 15 years? I can repeat the stories, but it'll get boring if I keep telling the same story, wouldn't it?
No, I mean, everything you know, like the plants, you're living on the Fiji Islands.
Well, okay, what I'm going to do is, what I'm going to do by asking the question is I'm basically telling you I'm going to do it. I'm not Fox News. I'm not CNN. I'm not MSNBC. I can do things other than report that Obama touched George Bush's shoulder, you know what I'm saying, and make that into a news story. I don't think the people care that much right now about politics. That's how I feel about it.
I agree. I just enjoy listening to whatever you have to talk about. I'm just amazed at your array of knowledge.
Yes, the breadth of Michael Savage's knowledge is awesome. A newspaper once wrote that about me before it was taken over by the gay mafia 15 years ago in San Francisco, when it was still run by rational, sane journalists, before it became nothing but an organ of hate. Pauline, name one story in psychological nudity, and a free book goes out to you quickly. Go ahead, please.
Your childhood died for a heart attack.
Bingo! How to get a heart attack. The child is staying on the line. Savage's prescription for a heart attack is childhood diet. No, truthfully, I mean, if you were to take lab animals and you said, okay, we got to induce coronary artery disease in this group of animals, then all you have to do is take my childhood diet and feed it to them for 3 months, they're all dead. Which, I mean, there's genetics involved, too. There are other factors, there's no question about it. I like a lot of the ignoramuses say, I think it's all stress. It's not all stress. It's not all diet. It's not all genetics. It's all a combination of all three, my friends. And the only thing you can modify is your environment. You can't modify your genetics. You can slightly modify your stress level, but stress is life. Life is stress. I don't understand this obsession in America with a stress-free life. Where does this come from that man is supposed to live in a stress-free environment? You got kids running around today in their 20s. They can't handle any stress. Oh, don't stress me out. Oh, don't stress me this. Oh, that's too stressful. I got to go in my room. I'm too stressed for this. I'm too stressed for that. You know, if your ancestors had that attitude, you wouldn't be here today. What you got to do is tell a child that stress is life. Life is stress. Get used to it. Learn how to roll with the stress. What are you talking about? Stress. Life is stressful. When you die, there's no stress. You know what I'm saying? Like my mother used to say to me, if I'd be lazy and I didn't want to get up and go to school or whatever, she would say to me the old homilies that people used in those days. She'd say, get out of bed, you lazy bum. You got plenty of time to sleep when you're dead. I mean, women from that, they weren't afraid to talk to people in a direct way. They weren't afraid they'd hurt your feelings. In fact, they wanted to hurt your feelings. That's how you make somebody do something, is by hurting their feelings, pushing their buttons, getting to them. Today, everyone, oh, your child's so sensitive. Don't hurt your child's feelings. You know what they'll grow up to be if you don't hurt their feelings? A born victim. A born victim, a guaranteed Obama worshiper. Because he promised not to hurt millions of people's feelings. He promised to save them.
Savage.
So everybody's getting bailed out. You know, I'd like to have a bailout, too. There's a few things I'd like to buy. Would you like a bailout? Would you like your mortgage paid for? Maybe the savior Obama can bail you out. Now understands the auto industry needs a bailout. Well, what's next? How about the radio industry? Many radio stocks are 24 cents, 35 cents. I'm sure the radio industry would like a bailout. I guess they didn't pay off the right lobbyist, or, I mean, it contributed to the right campaign. When will this end? And fundamentally, do you actually think these bailouts, so-called, are going to save the economy? We are in a depression. You want economics 101? The bailouts are nothing but bribery. And which industries are being bailed out depends upon who gets money to which politician when. It has nothing to do with rationality. It has nothing to do with the national interest as far as I am concerned. We are already in a major league depression, and all they're doing is staving off the inevitable. Now, you say to yourself, well, what's going to happen next? How does this end? What it comes down to is natural resources and military. Whoever has more of both is going to be the survivor. Houston, Texas. Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Nice to talk to you. To get to my point, earlier, not too long ago, you made a point about, you said that when growing up in New York that you didn't hunt, you know, as a kid growing up. And being from Texas, I grew up hunting, and you made the remark that it was a cultural thing, the reason that you didn't grow up hunting. And
right.
I've traveled all over the country working, and I've made that remark to people, you know, explaining to them that, you know, well, being, like, I've been to New York, and I've told people that, you know, it's a different culture to me, it's different. And whenever I would say that, they would get offended with me and, like, give me dirty looks that, you know, they'd say, well, we're all Americans, how can you mean it's a different culture?
Well, because they're ignoramuses, they don't know what you're talking about. These are stupid people. The fact of the matter is you can subdivide America into many different subcultures based upon the particular topic that we are discussing about. Let me give an example. You certainly wouldn't argue that all Americans have the exact same taste in music, would you?
Oh, no, sir.
No. So you'd say that certain people like certain kinds of music depending upon cultural differences.
Yeah.
And so some like classical music, some like so-called hip-hop, if you want to call that music, some like country and western. Those are all different cultures. Would they get offended if you said that music is based upon cultural differentials?
I wouldn't know if they would or not.
You have to explain it to them, sometimes to like children. You have to give them little pieces of candy at a time for them to understand what you're saying. I would suggest you say to them, I grew up hunting because I come from a different culture than you do. And if they get offended, say, now, don't take any offense at that. It's the same as saying, you may like one kind of music and I like another based upon a different kind of culture. Then they'll understand you, Chris.
Okay, I never thought of putting it that way. I just...
Well, this is what I'm here for. If I'm here for anything and can do any good, it's to help people explain their viewpoint of the world as opposed to the other man without getting into a screaming, you know, fight over it, Chris. But I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity for being so blunt about what you've faced on this world. Thank you very much. 1-800-449-82. I read that the Peruvians want to give a hairless dog to the Obama family because one of the little children, one of the beautiful Obama children, is allergic to pets. Now, I'm a man who suffers allergies, but I have a memo for the Obama family. Here's the article. Peru offers bald dog of Incas to Obamas. Peruvians crazy about their national dog, a bald and often toothless breed, popular among Incan kings, offered Monday to send a hypoallergenic puppy to the Obama family. One of the Obama daughters, Malia, is allergic to most breeds. Obama said Friday a speculation swirled about the dog the family would choose. Owners of the Peruvian hairless dog, a breed dating back 3,000 years and depicted in pre-Hispanic ceramics, says it is perfect for kids who are sensitive to dogs. Claudia Galvez, director of some group with the Peruvian hairless dog group, says they do not cause any type of allergy and are very friendly and sweet. Well, memo to Claudia Galvez and another memo to the Obamas. Neither do poodles. There's no need to take a dog from our dear friends in Peru because I am allergic to most animals, particularly cats, and I've yet to sneeze once after 4 years with my toy poodle, Teddy. This is a memo from Michael Savage to the Obama family. Get a toy poodle. The country will love you. Actually, I hope you don't get one because those Peruvian hairless dogs are really ugly. Why would they want a toothless dog, the Peruvian kings? I don't want to go in. I really don't want to think about that. But let me think about that for a minute. Let me go back to that story. Blah, 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 blah. Peruvian hairless dog. A bald and often toothless breed. I think those Incan kings liked a toothless breed. I think they were sickos, frankly. If you want to... I mean, Incan kings, they needed a dog without... Look, I don't even want to go there. Let's get off this right now. 1-800-449-8255. New York City, WR. Andy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Professor. You know, I wouldn't be too quick to think that Barack Obama is going to actually occupy the White House anytime soon. And here's my reasoning as to why. I believe, based on what I heard, two-thirds of all the Israeli citizens who have dual citizenship here in the United States voted for McCain. And knowing the relationship that Barack Obama is looking to have with the Hitler of Iran over there, I think that Israel is probably going to make their attack during this administration on the nuclear sites over in Iran. Before Barack
you basically,
Obama.
I'm sorry to say you probably missed the show, but that was my statement of last Thursday after the election. And I based it upon not Obama, but upon the chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, whose father is Israeli and was a former member of the group Ergun. So I said, if you actually think Obama is a piece of the guess again, that was my show last week, Andy.
You know what? Did you happen to mention, or do you believe that because of the executive powers of the President George Bush, that somehow or other he may be able to, or he will, continue to occupy the office even after January 20th?
No, please stop that. Come on. Now you're getting into the far reaches of insanity.
Well, anything's possible. We got over.
No. Please, that's not going to happen. But you see, you got to understand, politicians are shadows on the wall. They're not really who you think they are. None of them are. And to think that Obama's a radical leftist, well, all right, maybe I'm mistaken. But by what I've seen in this world, he's a puppet of very powerful forces. And you only have to look as far as Rahm Emanuel to understand that he's not as far to the left as you may think. And I said that for that reason, I believe there's a high likelihood there'll be a strike on Iran's nuclear facilities sooner rather than later, and I thank you for the call. Now we went off the off the farm there, off the reservation. Let's go to another topic, another caller. We got open lines at 1-800-449-8255. I do not need a bailout. Do you need a bailout? Do you want a bailout? Chicago, WIND. Anthony, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I was disgusted with the way John McCain ran his campaign, and now in the aftermath, I further find myself disgusted with the GOP painting Sarah Palin and Bobby Jindal as the face of the Republican Party.
Total insanity. But look, my friend, the Republican Party is bankrupt. They're bankrupt of ideas. They are, at their core, clueless country club fools. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know anything about the nation. They're not in touch with the people. Bobby Jindal could never, ever attract a national audience. I know this in my core. Just as I said that Giuliani would not play west of the Hudson River, I was right. I knew it before he got knocked out of the picture. It's the same with Jindal. And the only reason they're talking about Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, Anthony, is because the white men who run the Republican Party are racist. What they're saying is, what guys do we have up there? So they go through the list, the same with the woman thing. They're not thinking about what the American people want or what the American people know or what the American people will vote for. That's my opinion, Anthony.
Well, Dr. Savage, that is exactly why you can make a difference with, I mean, this thing is greater than you as an individual. I mean, you're your own Frankenstein in a way. We need you. And this.
Well, that's very nice of you to call me a Frankenstein. I appreciate that.
I meant it in a positive way, Dr. Savage.
Well, what do you mean I could create? What? Can you name one Republican who has a ghost of a chance to win anything?
Mitt Romney.
All right, let's talk about Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is another very curious fellow. Mitt Romney is another man who would not come on the Savage Nation. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that you're not really politically respected in the media, and that may be negativity with the homosexual.
How could I? Wait a minute. Hold it a minute. These are people who will go to a group of 15 people in a bowling alley. Why would they not come to a show that attracts at least 8 to 10 million people a week?
It behooves me. That's exactly why we lost the election. I mean, it seems...
It has nothing. No, it has nothing to do with respect. It has to do with disrespect for the conservative base. I represent more of the conservative base in America than anybody else in the United States media. That's why John McShane is on the Jay Leno show, because he's a used up hack. He's useless. He'll be forgotten within 3 months. Nobody will remember him. And he destroyed the Republican Party along with Bush. He would not come on this show. You know, McCain wouldn't even go on Rush Limbaugh's show, which is a moderately conservative program. To Rush's credit, he wouldn't go on that show either. Now, Mitt Romney voted for gay marriage when he was Massachusetts governor. You know that, don't you? All right. Mitt Romney is for open borders and granting amnesty to illegal aliens. Does that answer why Mitt Romney wouldn't come on the Savage Nation with his Colgate smile?
Yeah, that's a good point, Dr. Savage. Right.
See, Mitt Romney was more telegenic and a better candidate than John McCain. But politically, he's just another country club Republican. He will not excite the conservative base any more than McCain did. That's my opinion. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation. I want to take your calls right now. Joan in Florida, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I respect your views. I would just like you to try and have a balance between your stories about your childhood, which make people feel good and are happy, and the fact that we need someone right now to continue to keep speaking out about the political issues, because the golfer is only giving one point of view. And there are millions of people right now.
Well, what is the golfer talking about, how we need a Republican victory to save America? I don't listen to him.
Well, whatever he's saying, we need you to keep speaking to the issues, because there are now 57 million people who have voted for a different president than we have.
Yes, I understand, but right now there's a lull. Right now there's a lull after the election. So far nothing has changed other than the thieves who bankrupted America are still in power. The crooks who are bailing out their friends as fast as they can with taxpayer money are still not in handcuffs and orange jumpsuits. In fact, they're expanding the list of companies they're going to give handouts to under the name bailout. Let me remind all of you listening to this show, you are witnessing the greatest theft in the history of the world, never mind the history of the United States, and it's happening right before your eyes. Now, if you think the Democrats are going to stop it, I got another guest coming for you. Why have you not heard Obama say, well, I'm going to put a stop to these bailouts. We're not going to bail out Wall Street anymore. Because he is the same. Don't you understand this? In fact, they're going to make the bailout list even bigger. Now Pelosi et al. Want to bail out the auto companies. What's tomorrow? I want to remind you that in 1929, after the stock market turned down, which they call a crash, there was a very severe recession. The government moved in to try to stabilize the economy. And as a result of the government intervention, there was a wholesale depression. I can guarantee you the same thing is happening again. Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. And we, unfortunately, are ignorant. We're just ignorant of our own history, let alone the history of the world. 1-800-449-8255 phone number, michaelsavage.com website. PJ in Virginia, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Semper Fi, happy birthday, Devil Dog. We're a day late, but that's good. The story I wanted you to, that I like is the story about the circus man that you delivered statues to, and then you...
Oh, that's a good one. Half man, half woman.
Yes, I wasn't sure if it was a clown or a half man, half woman, because I listen to you all the time. And
yeah,
he had
a mustache and one breast, and he was in the Ringling Brothers in the freak show, but he was an art collector.
Right.
That was, you're going to win a copy of Psychological Nudity. You're a lucky woman. I don't know what page it's on, but it's in there. I'm not going to read from it right now. Time is too short. Stay on the line. Free copy going out to you. Everyone else, get it on michaelsavage.com. Not available in bookstores. What would you like to talk about? KNEW, San Francisco. David, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. My wife, before we got married, she took me to Concord, and it was just awesome. I was wondering if you're going to do any more live shows.
Oh, you were at my live program at the then Concord Pavilion. 7,000 wonderful fans, bigger than most rock stars can attract today. You know, I have not done a live performance since then. And there are a number of reasons I haven't, which I'd rather not discuss right now. But I am considering doing a number of live performances next year. You know, one West Coast tour and one East Coast tour, because I really do need to meet the people.
Wonderful.
I'm positive. You know, I'm sure if I did one in... I'm thinking Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Las Vegas. That would be the West Coast. Then I want to do an East Coast tour. I would do Boston. I would do something in New York. I would do something in the Atlanta area, and then one in Florida. That would be about an 8-city tour, and it would be broken up into two parts. I'm sure I could, 5,000, 10,000, maybe more, 20,000 people in each venue. And we could really make a difference because these are the people who the politicians have spit on. You know that, don't you?
Yes. We'd love
the people who listen to this show could have elected a Republican, but because John McShane was a front man and was set up to fail and fall, who's now trying to do bad comedy. You know, this guy is pathetic right now. I don't even want to go into it. It makes me sad to watch John McCain and also a little bit angry. When I see this jerk continuing to do the talk shows like Leno and all the other shows... What does he think he's going to get out of this? Does he actually think he's loved? I want to remind John McCain, you were nothing a year ago, and a year from now you'll be nothing again. The people didn't like you, John. All you got was a lot of publicity, but basically you're a hack for the Republican interests, and you blew it. Thanks for the call. I mean, don't get me started. I don't want to get mad. I really don't want to get angry right now. I want to remind you that in the third hour of this show coming up next is my good friend Rick Roberts, who is going to take the baton and run with it for an hour. I'll be back tomorrow. I am on a limited vacation in the Hollywood area. I was supposed to take the whole week off, but owing to popular demand, I'm working on my vacation. It shows you what you have to do in the talk show business. I'm actually working on the vacation. But that's the way it is. I mean, people say that they need to talk, they need to vent, they need to call, and you can do that. You can go to michaelsavage.com 24/7 and see the stories I have up there, and they're good. They're good stories. I wouldn't do it if it wasn't for the fact that I need a place to post the stories that get me excited in the morning. They incite me, some of them. Top left, gay marriage mob attack screams at elderly woman. Next, Moonbeam tells voters drop dead. Moonbeam is Jerry Brown. He thought, once a Moonbeam, always a Moonbeam. Schwarzenegger panders to gays and illegal state bleeds. Fears rise the Democrats will assault Second Amendment rights. Kids shocked must be able to read and write an ad to get into college. That's an interesting story. A proposal to cap the students admitted to the Cal University, the California University system, means that admissions officers might have to become selective. So all of the dummies are suddenly screaming that, oh my, I can't get into college? College, you know what college is to them today? College. 4 years of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, college. College, they need college. 4 years of a dummy sitting in a, running away from home to get stoned. Well, I guess they just raised the standards. You have to actually be able to write your own name. You have to read at least a paragraph. And you have to add two columns of two figures to get into a college in California today. Boy slits girl's throat in high school lobby. Cuban president to visit Russia. Cuban President Raul Castro will visit Russia next year, the Kremlin said on Tuesday, in a new sign that Moscow is reviving a Cold War-era trade and military alliance. Not good. Layoffs hit Al Gore's current media. Oh, my. 20% of the potheads have been cut at Al Gore's current media, the cable network that never made a nickel, co-founded by former U.S. Vice President Al Gore. You got to read that whole story. All of these kids who went to work for Al Gore said, well, they never told us they were going to do it. In fact, a month ago, they told us everything was still very good. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's like global warming, like you actually believe in global warming. And, of course, there's the comedian up in Minnesota where the fat comedian is about to steal the election because the Republicans are inept. This is the Savage Nation. Obama considering Jamie Gorelick for attorney general.
Savage.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Rick Roberts, sitting in for Michael Savage. You're on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for the opportunity once again. I want you to go to Michael Savage. That's michaelsavage.com. Of course, you can find out all about the book, Psychological Nudity. We may even, did Michael give us the thumbs up to give a book or two away? Maybe we can do that, too. We'll check on that. You know, I've been upset all day long. Upset, and for good cause, I think. Most of you, you get up in the morning. You shower, you take a bath, you do whatever, you lay out the clothes for the kids, you try to get breakfast going, ladies, you fix your hair and your makeup. No, I'm not being sexist. You know, guys, you get things going, okay, I got a report due today at 3, I got to do this, or maybe I got to go out to the job site, whatever it is, you're getting through your day, right? And then you get down to the kitchen and you try and cram a piece of toast in and you go, okay, finish your oatmeal, okay, do you have your homework? Okay, everybody got it? Okay, now you need to go. Oh, wait, don't forget that. That's your day, right? That's your day. And you do it every day, 5 days a week. And, of course, the kids are off on Saturday and Sunday. Many of you work on the weekends. Sometimes you have to work on the weekends or a second job. Maybe you're home long enough. Hey, kids, I was good. Oh, honey, that's great. I love that macaroni casserole. That's cool. All right, everybody, did you finish your dinner? Okay, let's tuck in. And then you go to your second job. And you do this day in and day out. And then when your head hits the pillow and your eyes close and you're going through the events of the day, as everyone does, right before you fall into that deep REM, many times, yeah, it was a tough day. My body hurts, my mind hurts, but at the end of the day, it was all worth it. And I am so, so lucky to be in this country. Now, that's your day. That's your day. Not so with the execs at AIG. AIG. Not so with these guys, you see, because they live in an alternate universe, evidently. They just don't get it. Now, let me ask you something, if I may. I'm going to be as elementary as I can possibly be here. All right? You've decided to start a small business. Well, good for you. Good for you. You'd made some pretty bad decisions. Actually, you went on that gambling junket, and then, you didn't really check out that one vendor, and when his product came in, it wasn't what it was. You just basically didn't do a very good job. So what happens? You're going bankrupt. You're going bankrupt. So you go to the bank and you say, look, listen, I need a little infusion of cash. All right, just a little cash, just to get me through. Say half a mil, all right? Now, I don't want you to put any conditions for repayment on it, all right? We'll call it a bridge loan. That's what we'll call it. Not a bailout, a bridge loan. I don't want any conditions on the money. I don't want you to monitor the money. I don't want to have any of those pesky restrictions like interest and repayment dates and all of that. Okay, just put the money in a brown paper bag. Okay, you know, nobody has to get hurt. Yeah, put the money in a... There you go. Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye now. And then you go back and you start doing the exact same thing. That's exactly what AIG has done again. Again, with your money. As your head hits the pillow tonight, and you shut your eyes, headed for that deep REM, hopefully, so you're refreshed in the morning, and you go through the events of the day, and you're getting up throughout the night to see if that little cover's going up and down on the little ones. And trust me, with a 19-year-old son that's 6'4 and 230, you still check in the middle of the night to see if the covers are going up and down. Okay, they're breathing. I can go back to sleep. You want to thank your government. A little extra prayer you send upward to the government for spending your hard-earned tax dollar for the previous scenario. Except it's AIG. AIG. Once again, they sent top execs to a secret gathering luxury resort in Phoenix last week. Now, no. This is not a replay. I'm not talking about the first luxury spa getaway after they asked money in the bailout. No. This is the second luxury getaway for executive officers and such after their second request for a bailout. This is after they requested and received $40 billion more of your money. For a total of, what are we up to now with AIG? Anybody got to calculate $150 billion? I don't even think you can wrap your head around that kind of money. This is what happened. They caught the AIG executives on hidden cameras, poolside, leaving the spa at the Point Hilton Squaw Peak Resort in Phoenix. They had gone to great efforts to disguise AIG. No signage. They were disguising the conference, making sure there were no AIG logos, no signs anywhere on the property. A hotel employee even told a KNXV reporter, I can't recall his name, we can't even say the word AIG. What were they doing? The same thing that got them into the mess that required them to get the bailout. Cover-ups. Cover-ups. Congressman Elijah Cummings, Democrat from Maryland, had this to say.
This is like the Titanic going down, and these folks asking us to rescue them. The Titanic's going down, but they're still playing their music, and they're still partying, and they're still dancing. What I'm saying to you is that people all over America are losing their homes. They don't have jobs. These folks are getting mega bonuses at Christmas time. I've got people who won't even get a dime at Christmas, won't even have a Christmas.
Now, that's a Democrat I can agree with, because he's speaking common sense. He's speaking common sense. AIG came under fire last month when congressional investigators revealed the executives for AIG attended a seminar. It's a seminar, which turned out to be day spa treatments, golfing getaways, catered buffets, lounging by the pools, and that cost around $400,000. Of course, you know, they don't want any restrictions, just like the automotive company. They really don't want any restrictions on the bailout money. This was their 2008 asset management conference. You don't have any assets. You just ask us to give you $150 billion. You know, I had a knockdown dragout with a guy this morning saying, well, Rick, I mean, this is like calling a frog green. You know they had these things planned before the bailout. Doesn't matter. Once you go to the American taxpayer and say, hey, we screwed up, and we need help. We need your money. You roll up your sleeves, you loosen your tie, you undo that first button up there, and you suspend all but necessary business action on premises. You sure as hell don't go play golf or some little, oh, look, they're big shrimp. How many? Oh, limit? Oh, it's all you can eat. Great. You don't go lounge by the pool. They even had Terry Bradshaw scheduled to come in for $40,000 just to give him a little pep talk. Hey, y'all doing? Ding, yeah, how's it going, man? And signing autographs. I want my money back. I don't know about you, but I want my money back. You know, Savage was talking about this just a moment ago. Bailouts. This isn't bailout. This is an early Christmas present for the CEOs and directors and executive officers of AIG. And then Nancy Pelosi, oh, this piece of work, what is she doing? Well, we need to bail out the three automakers. You know, $25 billion ought to do it. $25 billion here, $25 billion. No, it's not really a bailout. It's a bridge loan. It's not a bridge loan. These guys are eating money at the tune of $1 billion a month. You can't retool. You can't get back on board to make these fuel-efficient cars in enough time to before you eat up the $25 billion at $1 billion a month. And there's no, they don't want any conditions, by the way. You know, I don't want to talk about interest. I don't want to talk about repayment. Just give me the money. Just give me the money and go away. Well, why is it BMW and Toyota and all the rest of these people have plants in the southern part of the United States, and they're, you know, they're not... They're not setting records, but they're not going bankrupt. I'll tell you why. They're not union shops. That's why. You know, the average auto worker now in the big three is making about $42 an hour. And they're paying the guy cleaning the drinking fountains, riding around in a golf cart all day, $40 an hour. Lots of Americans out there. Well, you know, Rick, these folks are doing jobs Americans won't do. No, I'll tell you what. There are plenty of Americans out there that would take that work at half the price. Telling you, that's why I've been angry all day. AIG, not once but twice, threw it back in your face. Threw it back in your face. You got a good friend comes up to you, man, I've done everything I can. I made some bad business decisions. I'm strapped. You know, if you can just get me by. Okay, I'll get you by. Here's $5,000. You know, pay me back when you can. Don't worry about interest. We'll, you know, we'll get to that. And what's he do? He lost his money because he couldn't stay out of the bars. He takes your $5,000. Now he's buying drinks for the house. I want my money back. From the drunk and from AIG. This is Rick Roberts, sitting in for Michael Savage. Your call straight ahead on the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Rick Roberts, sitting in for Michael Savage. You're on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for that. I want to remind you to go to michaelsavage.com. Michael gave you a whole list of things. I mean, just plan to spend some time there. It's definitely worth your while. And, of course, the only place you can get Michael Savage's new book, Psychological Nudity, his fifth book, by the way, michaelsavage.com. I want you to listen. I want you to listen to someone for just a second. I'm going to get to your calls in just a second. The AIG CEO, his name is Edward Liddy. Now, I don't know what universe this guy lives in mentally, but evidently we're supposed to buy this. Listen to this.
No, I don't think it's doomed at all, Neil. I think the arrangement, the new arrangement we have with the Federal Reserve and Treasury is really a very positive one. It reflects them using all of the tools now at their disposal to help resolve the financial crisis that the country and the world are in. And I think it puts AIG in a much, much better position.
Okay, that's good. Let me straighten you out, Skippy. First of all, you don't have an arrangement with the Federal Reserve and the government. You got an arrangement with us. That's our dough. Okay? And quite honestly, if you're in such bad shape that you need $150 billion, I'm not sure that you need to be playing 18 holes of golf on a PGA course and having, unlimited buffets and spa sessions and day spa. This is just insane. This is absolutely insane. And now, evidently, everybody that is surrounding the new messiah, Barack Obama, is saying, well, now what about the automakers? We need to take care of them. $25 billion. Now, see, that's what I want to see the lamestream media talk about. I want to see them say, hey, you know what? Pelosi and Obama and all the rest, they're saying, we need to bail out. We bailed everybody else out except the American taxpayer. We need to bail out the automakers, the big three automakers. Even though everybody else that's non-union has still got their head above water, we need to bail these folks out. Even though they're burning $1 billion a month in cash, they need $25 billion, you see. No, they don't. Bust the damn union. That's what you do. Bust the union. Everybody else is doing fine. Of course, you know, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I'm the most anti-union guy you will ever find. But bust the union. You'll be fine. All right, let's go to your calls. Charleston, North Carolina. Steve, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Speaking of unions and Barack Obama, I was wanting to recommend to your listeners to make themselves familiar with a man named Saul Alinsky.
Right.
He was a community organizer in Chicago. He made famous and effective the use of intimidation and political or personal destruction, you know, in politics. And
yeah, the scorched earth policy, yeah.
Yes, sir. I think, to me, I see the mainstream media using these tactics when they see a candidate running for office, for example, that maybe the liberal media doesn't approve of. They allow tactics like that to be used and even use them themselves. And I believe that President-elect Obama comes from that same school, as a matter of fact, from the same city.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's that circle. Everybody runs in circles, right? Everybody does. And he runs in that circle of Chicago thugs. There's no secret there. You're right on point. But yeah, intimidation, politics of personal destruction, scorched earth policy. I don't know. Go through the list. It's all there. You know, at the same time, you know, you can't really blame Obama all that much for winning the election, because quite honestly, John McCain ran the most pitiful campaign I can ever remember in my adult memory. It was pitiful. It was horrible. You know, and now this, all day, 24/7, Palin's this, Palin's that. Palin was the only life in that dead horse. You know, and now she did this and she did that. I don't care about that. He lost. You know, let's focus on something else, like, oh, I don't know, what's this new president? What's his new change all about? But no, the media just can't get over themselves. It was like Savage was saying earlier. You know, if I saw it once, I saw it 1,000 times. Barack Obama touched Bush's shoulder. No, he did not. Yes, he did. Let's get a close-up. Let's get a live report. Yes, you can see behind me, this is the door that the President Bush and Barack Obama walked out. It was right here on this spot, right here where I'm standing. This is where Barack touched his shoulder. No, yes. Let's see if we can get a close-up of that. I don't care about that crap. Who cares about that? Nobody cares about that. Hey, Barack, what are you going to do about the gun laws? What are you going to do about the First Amendment? What's this garbage about a personal security force? What are you, Saddam Hussein? What about the fairness doctrine? What about stifling the First Amendment rights of dissenting views? Let's talk about that, shall we? Indiana, Matt, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Yes.
How you doing, Matt?
And on why I thought Barack Obama might be a threat to the United States as the greatest civilization ever, you know. I think there's three things that have been in common with, I guess, every great civilization that has ever fallen. And, you know, back to ancient history or any time. The first one being the fall of the institution of marriage, you know, and the breakup of the family. The second, you know, with the invasion of sexual immorality and the perversion in that. And then the third one is turning their backs, you know, as a nation on Israel. You know, as a Christian conservative, you know, I mean, I think you might not believe things like I do, but I think
this is what I believe, Matt. And you know, I don't do the God hour, but if I'm asked, I will tell you. You ask me. I believe in Jesus Christ as the living son of the living God. Okay, there you go. You don't like it? Hey, do whatever you want. That works for me. Now, having said that, you know, they didn't take God out of the school. They just made him real invisible. He was still there when I was in school. You know, he's in my head, my heart, my soul. And, you know, but what you're talking about is that no morality, no rules, no regulations, no parameters. Well, guess what? Human beings will always sink to the lowest common denominator if they're not given rules, regulations, and parameters. We always do. As a matter of fact, Matt, I'm going to do something when I come back. You be listening in just a second. I'm Rick Roberts, sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Rick Roberts setting in for Michael Savage. You're on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for the opportunity once again. Want to remind you, I can't remind you enough, michaelsavage.com. Michaelsavage.com, you'll find out, well, it's the only place you can get his new book. The first four books were bestsellers, as you well know. Psychological Nudity, the fifth book, a collection of all the stories you've heard Michael talk about. Go to michaelsavage.com. Plan to spend some time there. You'll enjoy it. The last caller was talking about... all of the gyrations a nation goes through before it achieves a certain level of success, or it ends up in this particular state or that particular. And Michael talks a lot about that. He's really good at that. I've done something myself that I go to from time to time. Democracy, always a temporary in nature, simply can't exist as a permanent form of government. Now, I don't know. It's the author on this is in question. It doesn't really matter. My father was from Scotland, so I like to think that this came about from Alexander Tyler, a Scottish history professor at the University of Edinburgh back in 1787. But he had this to say about the fall of the Athenian Republic about 2,000 years prior to this writing. A democracy is always temporary in nature, simply cannot exist as a permanent form of government. A democracy will continue to exist up until the time that voters, now listen, this is where you need to start listening, all you Barack Obama supporters. A democracy will continue to exist up until the time that voters discover that they can vote themselves generous gifts from the public treasury. Now, from that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates who promise the most benefit from the public treasury, with the result that every democracy will finally collapse due to loose fiscal policy, which is always followed by a dictatorship. Now, again, editorial insert. This is not some guy waxing poetic about things that he thinks or things that he's observed. This is viewing historical record at the time and nations that existed and then no longer existed at the time of this writing. I will continue now. The average age of the world's greatest civilization from the beginning of history has been around 200 years. During those 200 years, the nations always progressed through the following sequence. One, from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from great courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependence, and from dependence back into bondage. Now, I don't know where you think we may happen to be at this moment in time on Tyler's scale. I'm not real excited about it. But it's also Veterans Day. And I have to think about those people that gave ultimately the ultimate sacrifice to protect what we had maybe by hook or by crook created in this country. Now, it's got a lot of faults, it's got a lot of problems, and there are a lot of people in power that shouldn't be. But you have to stand to fight another day. You have to stand and fight another day. And I personally feel that while unions may have been necessary once upon a time, before OSHA and before all the rules and regulations and city and state and federal guidelines and all this other kind of stuff, yeah, that was probably a place for them. And, it bred corruption, without a doubt. I think a lot of these unions have outlived their usefulness. And I think those giant pigeon roosts, 5 and 6 stories tall, where once bustling business took place, are a testament in upstate New York and in Pennsylvania. You simply can't afford to pay some guy riding around on a golf cart $40 an hour to clean the water fountains. You can't do it. So why then? Why do we need to bail out the top three automakers, the big three as they're known, when they're burning about $1 billion a month in cash? $25 billion takes care of them for what, 25 days? I heard somebody speaking on behalf of the automakers today. Well, it's a bridge loan. It's not really a bailout. Let's not call it a bailout. No, not a bailout. It's a bridge loan. That's what it's a bridge. Oh, I don't have to call you a junkie either. I could say you're, inherently familiar with pharmacology, but you're still a junkie. So, I don't understand it. All these other car companies in the South, they're not, like I said, they're not setting records, but they're staying alive in a downturn. They're not asking for a bailout. Let's go to Mike. Mike in Chicago, Illinois. Mike, thanks for waiting here on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Rick, thanks for taking my call. I totally agree with you on what you're saying about the unions and snaring up the auto industry. I got to say, though, I think that the United States auto industry is a tremendous job producer, not just the companies themselves. and there may be problems with the way the unions interact. I totally agree with you, but I don't think we can afford to allow the big three, to fall apart, to go away, just because of that. I don't think that inherently they're bad businesses. I think that they, you know, like you said, the unions have outlived their usefulness, waste a lot of money, but I don't think we can afford to lose those companies.
Well, this is my point, Mike. You can't force people to buy cars. Right. If they don't want to buy cars, they're not going to buy cars. And the basis for the argument from the big three automakers' spokesman was, well, we're going to make it easier for people to get credit, and, you know, once the credit crunch passes, and, you know, Mike, General Motors is coming out this year with a new Hummer. Give me a break. We're talking about gas prices. We're talking about energy-efficient vehicles, and they can't figure out why people aren't buying cars. They're coming out with a new Hummer, Mike. And they're saying, well, just because we ease the credit crunch, then people are going to... No, they're not. People aren't going to buy used cars. They're not going to buy new cars. They're buying used cars in record numbers. So if they're not, if we can't force people to buy cars, why will we continue to keep something alive?
I agree with you that they're not, you can't force them to buy cars, but these companies do make fuel-efficient cars also, and they also produce a lot of jobs. And
people, they don't produce jobs if people aren't buying cars.
It's true.
I know you don't want me to be right, Mike, and quite honestly, I don't want to be right. I want to buy American. You know, I want people, if you're going to drive a truck, get an F-150, an F-250, F-350 with a gooseneck hitch, do something. Don't, you know, I don't even look at foreign pickups, even though most foreign pickups are made in the United States. But, Mike, I got to be a realistic person about this. You can't force people to buy new cars. And if you can get a better deal with a better warranty someplace else, you're going to do that. And just because the credit crunch passes and you make it easier for people to finance, they're still not going to go buy new cars until they're absolutely sure this thing has passed.
I'm saying, true, you're absolutely right. I don't disagree with what you're saying. However, we should try not to let these companies go away. You can start a financial company. You can start an insurance company with a couple guys, some money, and a bunch of suits. But you can't start an auto company that way.
Well, look, this is what I say. If the big three want to stay alive, this is the first thing you do. Scrap your idea for a new Hummer. If you can't sell a Taurus, you're not going to sell a Hummer. All right? Secondly, you start downsizing. You bust the damn union that's outlived its usefulness. You bust the union so you can be on par with everybody else making automobiles in the country where you are. You get rid of that, you downsize, and then you start looking at fuel efficiency as the number one focus and not, being more radical and new than the next guy. I mean, look, in a down, in almost a depression, people are going to sit on that money. If they can go out and buy a 2 or 3 year old vehicle with decent miles on it and maybe get a little bit of warranty, they're going to do it every time, Mike. They're not going to go buy a new car. And just because, you know, it's a great industry, and I agree with you. I'm a gearhead, Mike. I absolutely agree with you. I got a 56 Chevy 3600 pickup sitting in the garage waiting for restoration right now. But if it's outlived its usefulness, why would you keep throwing money at it just to keep it alive for old time's sake? It doesn't work like that. Mike, I appreciate the call very much. Atlantic City, Larry. Larry, thank you for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation.
Rick, we're going to need Detroit to redo the parts for the brain that I'm for the gasket in my brain that I'm going to blow up when the Treasury bails out big media.
I like that, big media. Well, if they're going to do people like AIG, which right now are probably listening to this broadcast, sitting in a chaise lounge by some pool in the desert someplace, having a little cocktail with an umbrella in it on your dime, Larry. If they're going to bail them out, if they're going to bail out all the rest of these people, if they're going to bail out the big three automakers, Larry, you know what's coming next. Insurance companies, right? Right? Insurance companies and everybody else they can throw in the mix and big media. Why not?
Exactly. I mean, that's when I'm going to blow my gaskets. When they're going to bail out the New York Times and CBS, CNN, the Washington Post, and all those other fish wrappers, we in talk radio, we're going to blow gaskets.
Well, Larry, what better way for the government to get their arms around a socialist form of government control of the media? Oh, man. Now I'm going to be up all night thinking about that. Thanks for that, Larry. That's all I needed to think about. Barbara, Chicago. Barbara, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Oh, I really want to talk about Snowy and psychological nudity, just to bring everybody's pressure down so they could pet an animal and just kind of chill. But the more I hear you guys talking, the more I have something to say about cars. In Chicago in particular, because we have such a large alien base, nobody buys cars anymore. They just ride these old wrecks until they literally fall apart because they know how to tinker, you know, to keep them running. And you can get lung cancer just from the exhaust. And now in Illinois, Rob Blagojevich wanted to make it so you don't even have to have an emission test on an older car.
Okay, what do you drive, Barbara?
We drive a 2003 Malibu.
Okay, so you're driving a GM product. 2003, what do you have on that? About 2003, you probably got 75,000 miles on it or so?
Yeah.
Is that about right?
Roughly.
Yeah, so you're going to be trading that in on a new GM product this year?
No, I'm going to go by what Dave Ramsey says and maybe get a good used one.
Okay, well, this is the deal, Barbara. You know why he says that? Because it makes good common economic sense. Nobody, unless you're absolutely independently wealthy and you're looking for a way to burn cash, is going to go out and buy a new car. You're not going to do it. You may go out and buy another house because, you know, they're at bargain basement prices right now, given the real estate market, but you're not going to go out and buy a new car. You're not going to do it. Not unless they can just make it so absolutely unbelievable, offer-wise, you're not going to do that. Now, BMW and Toyota and Nissan, all the rest, they're doing okay. They're not doing great. They're not setting record sales figures at all. But they're not asking for money for bailouts. Why? Because they're not operating the same way as the big three automakers. But most importantly, they're not union shops. So they don't have to pay the guy emptying the trash $40 an hour. All right? I mean, basically, the unions killed the steel industry. You know that. They've killed all kinds of industry in this country. And what happens? Those companies go overseas. And the union goons and the bent-nosed boys, they go on down, hey, Yus, come here. They just find somebody else to intimidate, find somebody else to extort from. Oh, I'm absolutely the most anti-union guy you'll ever meet. And I'm not talking about unions of the past that kept, 12-year-olds from working 18-hour days. I'm talking about the bent-nosed boy and the union goons that, I need, and I'll tell you, one of the worst unions is the California Teachers Union. Now, I know I'll get all kinds of letters and stuff, so be it. One of the worst unions is the California Teachers Union, probably one of the most powerful lobbying groups in Washington. They have got it now where these poor teachers that go in to be educators and find out they're traffic cops in the halls, this has nothing to do with educating children. It has everything to do with about being a powerful lobbying group. You know, they take their dues. They don't get to say where their dues go politically one way or the other. Yeah, get rid of the unions, and you're going to see a turnaround economically in this country. But that's not going to happen, is it? Oh, no, we can't do that. Oh, no, Rick, what are you talking about? You know, my daddy was a union member. I'm a union member. Hey, I'm not talking about you hardworking guys out there that bust your butt 10, 12 hours a day. I still believe you can do better on your own. I've done it myself. Many people have. But generally speaking, unions have outlived their usefulness in this country. And I know I'll get hate mail, death threats, and everything else. It happens every time I bring it up. But why should we be throwing $25 million taxpaying dollars at the big three industries when they're just going to turn around and give it to the American auto workers? I don't get that. Well, is that a payoff for their support of Obama? Is that what it is? Oh, you didn't say that out loud. Yeah, I did. This is Rick Roberts, sitting in for Michael Savage. You're on the Savage Nation. Savage. Rick Roberts, sitting in for Michael Savage. You're on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for the opportunity once again. I want to urge you to spend some time, michaelsavage.com. Michaelsavage.com, you can get, it's the only place you can get Michael's fifth book, Psychological Nudity. And the stories of the day, of the week, of the month, of the year, they're all right there, michaelsavage.com. All right. I want to get back to your calls. I've been remiss. I haven't taken enough of your calls. So many things are going through my head right now. The bailout. No, thank you. No. Why is Obama in the White House? Because John McCain didn't campaign for anything. I don't know whether it was a foregone conclusion, whether he was trying to throw the deal. I don't know. But he sure wasn't acting. Do you recall in the very first part of his campaign when he was out there talking about Obama? He's a good man. And you don't need to be, and I'm using his term, not mine, scared of him being president. Of course, he was booed down. Because, and this was how he started his campaign. You know, I thought, well, you know, maybe because so much has been said about, you know, he's a fighter, he's a lookout, he's got a temper, you know, he'll knock your socks off, he'll take a swing, you know, all that stuff. And then he comes out just the opposite. So I don't know, maybe his own press got to him. But I don't know that Obama won, but John McCain certainly lost. And I'm about sick of hearing all this stuff about Sarah Palin. You know, she was the only DNA in that campaign, as far as I'm concerned. Oh, what the most pitiful campaign in my adult memory. And, of course, now Pelosi's talking about we need to bail out the big three automakers. Why? Why? Downsize, bust the union, and do like everybody else. What would you do if your business was going to pot? If you got laid off, your kids still got to eat, right? Still got to go to school. You downsize. You get a smaller house. You pick up whatever jobs you can to fill the interim. You do whatever you have to do. You don't go look for a loan to keep your quality of life at the same level it's always been. And that's exactly what AIG, the Big Three, and all these other people are doing. We don't want to, we might have to move to our location to a smaller place. Or, I don't know, we may have to get by with fewer employees. And what? What? They're not going to bring lunch in on Thursdays in the conference room? Oh, we can't do that. Yeah. Our quality of life has to change when things happen, even the aren't necessarily our fault. So why should their impact, why should their quality of life from a business standpoint not change one bit? No, I'm not for bailing out the big three. Sorry, I'm not. Carolyn, San Francisco. Carolyn, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure,
thank you.
I'm
actually a recent transplant from Washington, D.C. I lived there for 13 years.
You
and
escaped,
I actually sold software development services, consulting services, into the unions for a lot of years back in the early 2000s and late 90s. And the amount of waste that I experienced while doing these projects was unbelievable. We would go into meetings at some of the larger unions, and they would offer us coffee out of, like, fancy coffee, like latte, espresso. I was just in shock. The amount of money that they would waste just in their regular day-to-day office operations, I can't even go into the amount of money that they wasted on these sort of dead-end projects. So it used to really upset me to know that so much money was coming out of people's paychecks, the union members who were also go-go union, and then all this money is coming out of their paychecks to pay for all the stuff at the union headquarters. There's so much waste that would go on.
Of course. It always happens that way. People are never as frugal with somebody else's money as they are their own. There's no investment. You know, they're getting this, the bent-nosed boys are getting this every single month. It's not a whole lot different than protection. And Michael could probably tell you about that growing up in New York. You know, I love New York, but man, there are some neighborhoods there, the remnants of the bent-nosed boys still around, the docks still around. Yeah, you know, they're wearing better suits, driving nicer cars, but that same mentality is still there. Yeah, big three, you want to survive. Don't look to the American taxpayer that is not planning to buy your car anyway for a bailout. Do this. Downsize. Get rid of the union. You can do it if you want to. Oh, there'll be protests and, oh, my gosh, you know, all kinds of harassment. Yeah, the American taxpayer goes through it every single day. Downsize. Relocate if you need to here in the U.S. Retool. Reorganize. And come back. You're going to be smaller. You may not be the big three. You may be the not quite so big three, but at least you'll still be around. Look at BMW and all the rest. They're in the United States. They're not asking for a loan. Try it. It'll work, all right? And then when times get better in the next couple of years, people will start buying cars again. Guess what? You'll still be around without the help of the American taxpayer. The only thing you should be involved with the American taxpayer is them buying your new vehicle. This is Rick Roberts sitting in for Michael Savage. Thank you, Michael, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.